And on the dark side of the moon has been Artemis 1. Now, the Orion spaceship is now on its way back to Earth after spending 10 days orbiting the moon. Yesterday, whilst behind the moon at 3:43 a.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, Orion fired its main engine for 3 minutes and 27 seconds. This increased Orion's speed by 1,050 kilometres per hour and gave it enough velocity to escape lunar gravity. Soon after the engine firing, the spacecraft came as close as 129 kilometres to the dark face of the moon before soaring high over the sunlit near side and on its way to Earth. Splashdown off the coast of California is due on Monday, December the 12th. Now, eagerly awaiting the return of Orion are a bunch of scientists who have biological experiments. Two of them are Holly Birdsall of Baylor College of Medicine and Timothy Hammard of Duke University, and they have some algae aboard.
We are flying a green algae, which people think of as pond scum, which it is, but there's much more to it.
They are a great little tiny traveling companion that can answer a lot of our needs.
Green algae are a very special entrance point, a key to studying cells and their reactions in the whole plant world.
Algae is a wonderful source of hydrogen, which is a gas but that can be used as a fuel. You can eat algae. You may have to do a little something to make them tasty, but they are edible. When you go into deeper space, and Artemis is going to go a lot further than, let's say, the International Space Station, it's going to be exposed to what we call deep space radiation, which is more intense and a somewhat different kind of radiation than we can generate here on the surface of the Earth. We have thousands of different kinds of algae. Each one is missing one little key part of its total machinery, its total information. We're going to let them grow as they go around the moon, and we're going to see who grows the fastest and the best, because that's the one that you want to take with you when you go to Mars.
Our work will begin to answer the questions of how to optimize plants in space and how to protect astronauts in space. Space is a very good tool to answer clinical questions on the ground. We've never had the chance to study cosmic radiation since the 70s, and the tools to do it now are dramatically better. So Artemis will let us learn a lot of things that are both relevant to radiation therapy on the ground and protecting astronauts for long-term flight, based on which genes are responsive to the radiation.
I'm Holly Birdsall.
And I'm Tim Hammond.
And we are Artemis.
Zheng Wang works at the United States Naval Research Laboratory, and he has some fungi aboard Artemis 1.
Research in space is very important because in the future, we want to send people to space, to the moon, to Mars. We have to understand how can we survive. This is an unknown environment. The fungi by nature has its natural mechanisms to survive and grow in a high radiation condition. This experiment wants to understand how the fungi adapt to this space environment, how they cope with the radiation. This allows to find a new strategy or medicine to prevent astronauts from damage by space radiation. The second thing is also we want to develop kind of new biomaterials, not only protect human beings, but also can make coating material to protect spacecraft and also electronic equipment in space. Third one, so we want to build up, kind of, we can use it as a fungi to build up biomanufacturing facilities in space. So we can produce a lot of materials, biomaterials, medicine, even food in space. So we don't need to transport these materials to space in the future. This will significantly reduce the cost. I want to take this opportunity to thank NASA to provide us this great opportunity to fly our experiments to the moon. And secondly, I also like to thank the U.S. Naval Research Lab to provide us a tremendous resource to allow us to explore deep and think big. Hi, I'm Zhen Wang. I'm Artemis.
Federica Brandisi works at Michigan State University, and she's looking after the seeds. Well, she will when they come back from the moon.
We had to think about having plants that can produce more of the nutrients in a limited space and with limited resources. Our technology equips plants with a higher content of amino acids that are essential for the human diet. We're going to send seeds of a model plant that is called Arabidopsis italiana, and we would like to see how, when these seeds come back from space, how these seeds react to space. We are attempting to see how we can improve plant productivity using plants that we have modified to have more resources to withstand space flight. By 2050, our population would have exploded. We need to make plants that are stronger and more yielding in terms of biomass productivity to make the tools for mankind to survive in a space that is not becoming bigger, but where the human population is becoming more numerous. This, for me, will be my third mission to space. And I can tell you that for the other two missions, when we were doing the countdown of the rocket going out to space, I cried because it was so exciting being part of history, because each rocket they sent to space is part of history. But Artemis is mind-blowing because it allows to achieve so many milestones. I'm Federica Brandizzi, and I am Artemis.
Louis Zay is at the University of Colorado in Boulder, and his interest is in yeast.
It will be really, really hard to send a lot of humans in a spacecraft. You can send millions and millions and millions of yeast cells in a tiny little bag. We're going to use yeast, which is the same thing we use to make bread. And the reason for which we're flying these little cells is because they share a lot in common with our cells, our human cells. And you can still study things that would happen to those cells that are very similar to what would happen to our cells if they were under those conditions. In this case specifically, it's that they are in the microgravity of space, as well as a higher radiation environment, very far away from Earth, past the Van Allen belts, which is part of this shield we have around planet Earth to protect us from radiation. What we're trying to do is try to use the microgravity environment of space to find solutions to medical problems on Earth. That's one. And the other thing is to make sure that human space exploration is as safe as possible. It is pretty humbling and outstanding in every regard to think that we have something on board Orion in Artemis 1. And I'm pretty sure that I speak for the whole team that we are very grateful. You can only imagine the amount of work of so many people to get to this point. And in this case, we're also thankful that NASA Biology and Physical Sciences were able to include 4 experiments inside the Orion vehicle. So thanks to all this team effort of so many people across the United States and international partners, we're going to be able to hitch a ride and perform our scientific research. I'm Luisia, and I'm Artemis.
And those speeches courtesy of NASA. Now, Henry Louis Gates Jr. is a United States literary critic, a professor, a historian, and a filmmaker. He made this comment on the Artemis 1 mission after viewing some of the amazing images of the Moon and Earth as seen by the Orion spacecraft.
These images reveal with stunning, humbling sublimity the triumph of the human spirit in breaking beyond the confines of the Earth. Let us hope that this milestone will inspire us to transcend all possible manner of difference, as the great Du Bois once put it, and keep foremost in mind all that we have in common as human beings, as sisters and brothers here on Earth.
And Artemis 1 is due to splash down on Monday. Yes, this coming Monday, so we look forward to that happening. This is The Space Show.
Southern FM.
The sounds of the Bayside.
I saw the crescent.
Well, if you've been watching the Artemis mission video coming down from the Moon, you would have seen the whole of the Moon. At the beginning of the mission, we saw the far side of the Moon, and now, on the way home, we've seen the near side of the Moon. Now, what about the CubeSats that were launched? There were 10 on the Artemis 1 Space Launch System rocket, and they were deployed, all 10 of them, but some of them have disappeared. So let's get an update on a few of these. The Near Earth Asteroid Scout mission, gone, lost. No one knows what's happened to it, so they're still trying to get hold of it. Then there was the CUSP, the CubeSat to study solar particles. Well, about 30 minutes after being ejected from the second stage of the Artemis 1 rocket, the Deep Space Network received open-loop receiver telemetry from CUSP. This indicated that the CubeSat had booted up, detumbled, deployed solar arrays, and assumed a safe sun-pointing orientation. Since then, no further contact has been made with the spacecraft. Oh dear. Now, CUSP has either gone into heliocentric orbit as intended, or it has crashed into the Moon. Now, this is a mystery that we'll even likely to know the answer to. Meanwhile, BioSentinel is one of the 10 CubeSats released by Artemis 1. It was to fly past the Moon and into heliocentric orbit. Now, no word was given in the first week of its progress other than a message that it is transmitting. So we don't know quite what's happening with BioSentinel. There was a word on Monday that news came that BioSentinel had a bit of a wobble early on, and that the initial telemetry indicated that the spacecraft was tumbling. However, in a statement, NASA said the BioSentinel team worked with the Deep Space Network to send commands to stop the tumble. A couple of tense hours later, the team received telemetry showing the detumble was successful. Since then, BioSentinel has remained stable and has continued to perform its mission milestones as planned. On November the 22nd, the spacecraft passed approximately 400 kilometres above the Moon's surface and spent 36 minutes in darkness as it passed through the Moon's shadow. Upon emerging back into sunlight, BioSentinel again pointed its solar arrays at the sun and recharged its batteries. The biology experiment is expected to begin next month. Now to the Japanese Equilis mission. As reported on last week's The Space Show, Equilis passed the moon, taking photographs as it did so. On Saturday, the Japanese Aerospace Exploration Agency announced that the craft had made orbit maneuver control and orbit corrections before and after the lunar flyby. The agency noted the lunar flyby was completed as planned on November the 22nd and that Equilis has been confirmed to be in the planned orbit towards the second Earth-Moon Lagrange point. The JAXA further stated that this is the first successful control beyond low Earth orbit using a water propellant propulsion system. Now, Equilis will reach the Lagrange point in about 1.5 years. Yeah, 1.5 years, so don't keep your fingers crossed. Now, another Japanese CubeSat was Omotenashi. Now, although the Omotenashi CubeSat failed its objective of landing a small probe on the moon, the main craft, if contacted, will continue to perform radiation measurements outside of the Earth's magnetosphere. Oh, and speaking of the Earth's magnetosphere, a Japanese satellite that has been studying the anti-sunward magnetic field, that is the magnetotail, has ended its mission after 30 years. GeoTail was launched in July of 1992 and made groundbreaking discoveries about the Earth's magnetic field. One of these was demonstrating that magnetic reconnection occurs at the daytime boundary and tail of the magnetosphere. This clarified how ions and electrons behave on the side of the Earth facing away from the sun. When launched, GeoTail had a planned lifetime of 3.5 years. In June this year, the 30-year-old data recorder stopped operating, prompting the decision to terminate observation operations on November the 28th. The satellite's radio transmitters have now been switched off. Oh, and a week ago, Capstone, the craft that was launched from New Zealand, has completed the final maneuvers to place it in its target orbit around the moon. The NASA spacecraft refined its path in the orbit it arrived in a fortnight ago. The technology demonstration is now in its operational phase. The commercially owned and operated spacecraft was launched from New Zealand on June the 28th.